This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Later in the program, an interview with Broadway actress and CCM grad Shoshana Bean. She has a new PBS concert special tomorrow. But first, late last year, the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra signed a new 3-year labor contract with the Cincinnati Musicians Association. It's been called historic and has symphonies across the country asking questions. We're going to talk about the deal today. Joining me are CSO Chief Operating Officer Robert McGrath. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Marianne.
Also, CSO Associate Principal Viola and Local 1 of the American Federation of Musicians President Paul Frankenfeld. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Marianne. Nice to be here.
And attorney Barbara Giacoma, who represents Local 1 of the American Federation of Musicians. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, my pleasure.
Well, we'd like to hear from you, too. You can give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or send us a tweet. And a note, the CSO is a financial supporter of WVXU. To get us started, and Robert, perhaps we start with you. Can you start to explain this agreement? How did it come about, and what are some of the main points?
Sure. Well, I guess I'd say there's probably three main facets of this agreement that are all sort of natural extensions of what for us was a very eventful, but ultimately rewarding and sort of institution-building pandemic season, if you will. Like many others, we were severely impacted by the financial implications of the pandemic. We faced an entire season where we were only able to perform together in small ensembles or in small chamber ensembles, and we had to wait all the way until January of 2021 before we were able to even safely allow audiences to return to music hall on even a socially distanced basis. We were in a position, thankfully, we like many others, had to take some concessions in terms of the compensation for our staff, for our musicians. But that was much more generous than many of our colleagues, in large part because of the generosity of our board and our funding community, as well as some modest rainy day funds that we had set aside precisely for something like this. And so this new agreement restores the compensation to pre-pandemic levels, plus also allows for some modest increases in each of the 3 years ahead. It allows us to quickly and aggressively work to restore the members of the orchestra to their pre-pandemic levels, because we presently have 9 vacancies and growing. And notably also, it establishes some very new flexible work rules in how we both structure the work week and in how we can deploy the members of the orchestra both on stage and in the community and in the schools to make sure that we're meeting our vision of being the most relevant orchestra in America.
Now, Paul, can you talk about, as the American Federation of Musicians president, how the musicians felt about all this and what kinds of particulars you were looking for as this agreement was coming together?
It's important to point out here, Marianne, that we all have sort of a mutual stakeholder view of the entire institution. We have a less traditionally confrontational sort of a situation than so many other orchestras do. And so musicians were most interested, first and foremost, in maintaining the integrity of the institution, both financially and in terms of being able to continue working, even if it was on an altered basis. And so it's important to note, I think, that much of the groundwork for the current agreement was reached during August of 2020, when we were going into that pandemic year, where the first portion of the year was all done basically via digital concerts and whatnot, and where we were, as Robert was speaking of earlier, we were limited by the fact that we had to be distanced on stage and whatnot. So we already had to look into some possible other things, and we took a lot of the framework that already exists for our rules during the summer opera season, which limits us to 20 hours per week rather than the 8 traditional services, which are either rehearsals or concerts or a performance or anything like this. And so for the orchestra, we actually had kind of a test run in the one-year agreement that we had last year, and now it's being implemented with the full orchestra on stage this time. And so the musicians were pretty eager to keep going and moving forward, because we were really sort of at the cutting edge in comparison to many other orchestral institutions in North America.
And Barbara, how quickly did this all come together? And you were one of the negotiators, I assume.
It seemed like it didn't come together quickly at all. It took quite a while, actually, and a lot of conversation, not just between management and the union and the orchestra committee, among, I should say, the management and the orchestra committee and the union, but because we had a lot of conversations with the musicians. Team worked very, very hard. The negotiating team for the union side, I'm sure management did too, worked very hard to consider all the options and all the implications. Everybody is sort of understating the change here in a way. The traditional work week for musicians is divided into services, as Paul alluded to. And services can mean opera, ballet, rehearsals, concerts, pops in this orchestra. It can mean lots of different things, and there are time factors attached to it. This is a little different. I don't think the musicians are minding it, according to Paul, at least, but it is somewhat different, and that's what's garnered some interest around the country. The management here did ask for flexibility. We considered it long and hard. This was not a question of, oh, sure, this is great. This is, should we continue doing what we're doing? What are the implications? What are the implications for my life outside of work for the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, frankly? And what are the implications for me as a, not me, but them as performing musicians? I don't play anything. I do think that this has been a very good experience, as usual, in Cincinnati. I brag about Cincinnati as though I own it, but I don't.
One of the parts of the agreement that I found interesting is that it allows the symphony to deploy musicians into the community. And maybe, yes, Robert, you can talk about that, what that means, not only for the musicians, but for the community as well.
Sure. Maybe I'll give you two concrete examples. Relative to these work rules that we were just speaking about, typically in a week, if you would have, you would divide things up into hours of time. Now we look at things much more in the aggregate. So, for instance, in the last 20 years, a lot of orchestras increasingly, like the Cincinnati Symphony and the Cincinnati Pops do, have film programs that are regularly part of our performance season. And as you know, a film might range anywhere from 90 minutes, 2 hours, all the way up to like 2.5, 3 hours for some of the Harry Potter films, or even longer for Lord of the Rings. This kind of arrangement now allows us to look at the week more in the aggregate, and allows us to do those sorts of things without involving overtime, provided things are balanced out over the course of the week. So that's the main primary adjustment, is that it really looks at the week as a whole and the aggregate, rather than broken up into these little more traditional units. And the same principle really applies with respect to the deployment of musicians in the community. We've had a long-standing tradition of the members of this orchestra performing in small groups in the community for neighborhood concerts, for school visits, for nursing homes, you name it. But what's different now is that a lot of that's been done on a volunteer basis. The volunteer basis still exists, but we've created additional incentives and additional opportunities for even during a regular work week. For instance, there's now mechanisms that if, say, for instance, we might be playing in the ballet, for the ballet and in the pit, and only have about 2/3 of the members of the orchestra performing that particular week, there's now mechanisms to assign other members of the orchestra to also go out and perform for some of these opportunities during, what would otherwise be a regular work week. So it's just another expanded toolkit to make sure that we can really be responsive to the community and to our partners by performing as robustly as possible.
Paul, you had talked about there being a less confrontational environment in the process of working this out. Is that different than across the country? I mean, is it different than the Cincinnati Symphony had before?
It's not different from what the Cincinnati Symphony had before, Mary Ann, but it is, unfortunately, for some of our sister and sibling orchestras, I should say, not the same other places, where there's a feeling that, oh, let's see what we can get and let's see what we can extract from the musicians, from the boards and the managements. Here it has really evolved. This is my 43rd season with the orchestra, and I've seen it really evolve, particularly in the last 30 years when we had a financial crisis before. And there's a great deal of familiarity between the musicians and the members of the board, because orchestras are, after all, nonprofits that are dependent upon donations from community members and corporations and whatnot. And so we've really, really been striving for these past 30 years to break down any walls between the musicians and the entire community. And of course, with this labor agreement, that should help even more, because we'll be able to go out, as Robert was speaking of, to use the smaller ensembles as part of, say, a work week in some cases, if a musician isn't doing something else. It's been a big issue for many orchestras in the country, because I tend to view that symphony orchestras are a little bit like giant aircraft carriers or cruise ships. Once they get going in one direction, that's great and that's all fine and dandy, but it's very, very hard for them to be nimble and adjust to things. And this is becoming more and more a very important part of the variety of services that we can offer the community, certainly playing in neighborhoods even doing fundraising activities for the orchestra with utilizing the members of the orchestra who oftentimes like to play in smaller groups. It was for many years a part of the contract that the orchestra couldn't be broken into groups of smaller than 30 unless we had permission from the union and the musicians. But now this represents a real path into a whole new direction.
Barbara, go right ahead.
No, I was just going to piggyback on that for a moment, Marianne, if that's okay. I have experience around the country. I've seen orchestras fold. I've seen orchestras do terrible damage. I fortunately haven't been too involved in some of the current messes around the country. But this organization, including the musicians, have always had a long view. And it's made us mad sometimes as a union, I'm going to say. But mostly, it's worked out extremely well. We've given at the office, as I sometimes put it, many times, but we've always had an understanding that they will try their best to fundraise and do the right thing. And this community has been totally appreciative of that. It's really quite remarkable. And I hope it continues into the future. Every indication is that it will. And we'd love to spread this around the country. It's really good labor relations. Again, not perfect, nothing is, but really good labor relations.
You said something that was interesting to me, though. You said they always take the long view, and sometimes that made us mad. Why would that make you mad?
Well, they've come to us on occasion and said, you know, that contract we signed a year or two ago, Paul, you can correct me about this. We can't honor it because the stock market's gone down or something else has happened. And who likes to hear that a promise that was made couldn't be kept? We've always managed in those negotiations to know what the bright side is going to be, to know how we're going to recover from that. And it's usually worked. There's a trust here that nobody's lying to the musicians, that everybody is struggling to do the very best they can to keep this institution going. And as part of the wider community, it's very important to the institution. It's very important to the musicians. And that's really a lesson for around the country. You've got nothing.
Talk about around the country. Have you heard, you said you've worked with other symphonies. What are people saying about this? Is this seen as historic across the country? Are people really interested?
They are interested. They are. Yeah. I think they're a little suspicious, right, Paul, would you say, on our side?
Suspicious? Why?
Well, it's different. As we said, you know, usually the work week is divided in a different kind of way. And now it's going to be done a little differently, just as long as there are guardrails and people are not going to be overworked or asked to do things that they really can't do without hurting themselves. These are performing musicians. And if you talk to folks around the country who work with musicians, you know, they can get hurt if they're overworked. Sounds odd. They're not, you know, climbing scaffolding or anything, but they are using their bodies in very particular ways. So it's important. And I think that this management has always viewed it that way. Other managements, as Paul said, have tried to take advantage of this situation. This, oddly enough, I think, was viewed as serendipitous. I think Robert alluded to that earlier. You never want to call a pandemic serendipitous, but it did lead to some innovations that may work. We'll see.
Robert, another part of the contract, I believe, talks about seeking diversity and inclusion. And I know you have, I think, 9 open positions. What are you going to do to do that? I know you made an announcement today about a diversity officer. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a big announcement today. Our new chief diversity and inclusion officer, who started in the spring, that position has now been endowed in the name of Judge Nathaniel Jones. Harold Byers is his name. Harold Brown. And Harold is one of a member of this new diversity task force that's been created in the agreement. This is actually something that we began during the pandemic season and have now memorialized for the duration of this agreement. This is just one of many steps we're taking across the organization, but specifically with respect to the hiring and recruiting practices for both substitute and full-time musicians. This is a group of 4 musicians and 4 staff members who are regularly meeting throughout the season to scrutinize all aspects of the chain, from recruiting to audition to hiring practices. And we're really trying to look at, sort of break our work into 3 buckets. There's a category of things that are completely within our control to affect and impact change immediately. There's other categories that would require contractual changes to the CBA that we're talking about here. And this task force has been empowered to make recommendations to the players committee during the course of the contract to make changes in real time rather than wait 3 years for the next negotiation. And then there's other aspects that would require sort of systemic or industry change. But I can just give you one concrete example of something
30
very
seconds.
Simple. Great. Believe it or not, you know, we have a goal to increase the diversity of our candidate pool to double that in the next 5 years. But most orchestras, including Cincinnati Symphony, have never even tracked the data of the diversity of the candidate pool that comes to our auditions. So we have no way to even benchmark our progress.
We're about out of time. Exactly. I'm going to stop you. So you'll be working on that now. I appreciate it. This went way more quickly than I thought. I want to thank you all for being here today. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you so much. Our pleasure, Marianne. Mm-hmm.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Engineer for today's show is Josh Elstro. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.